Ridge, your hometown voice.
This is Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge,
your hometown voice.
And now your host, the Rogue announcer, Jeff Smith.
And this is Jeff Smith. I am the Rogue announcer, and this is Rogue Talk for, what is today, April 24th? Is that right? Boy, this March seemed like it took about 3 years, and now we're already at the 24th of April, although some of you probably feel like it's still March and it's going on forever. I'm one of the, I guess you could say, lucky ones that I'm still working. We're not going to have the phone lines available today, but I have a feeling we might have a few people would like to communicate with the show today. I've got a very special guest, an old high school friend of mine, actually an old Little League friend of mine. And we're, as I mentioned last week, we're going to talk about the story involving Commander Crozier, Brett Crozier, who was the commander of the USS Theodore Roosevelt. And the story got updated again today, so we're going to talk about all of that. But I have a little clip I was going to play right on the intro, but I had too many things in front of me to get that going. But let's play this little clip I've got here. Of this was a tribute video, or actually a video in support of Captain Crozier from a bunch of his classmates. He was the class of 1988 at Santa Rosa High School in California. I was class of 87, but there's actually a couple of my classmates in that video, mostly from the class of 88. But it's a nice video. I'm not going to play the whole thing, but I'll play a little piece of it here so you can get kind of a taste of what this was like. And let's see if I can get that here.
Oh, Captain, my Captain.
I salute you.
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 Captain Crozier.
Captain Crozier.
Captain Crozier.
Captain Crozier.
Captain Crozier.
And that's just a little taste of that. It's actually about 3.5 minutes long. If you want to take a look at it, if you haven't seen it yet, go on YouTube and search SRHS for Santa Rosa High School, class of 88, and it'll pop right up. You don't even have to finish typing the rest. It'll say tribute to Captain Brett Crozier, and take a look at it. It's a really nice video, and one of the voices you heard in that video, as I mentioned, an old Little League buddy of mine, and has become one of my favorite people on social media that I've reconnected with. You know, we reconnect with everybody, and through, you know, Facebook and other social media. And this guy is one of the most thoughtful people that I know. He's got a blog. I'll have him plug that. Served in the first Gulf War in the Navy. He initially worked with Tomahawk cruise missiles, and then he was selected as a demolition diver. He was honorably discharged as an E-4 petty officer, third class. And as I mentioned, he was a blogger. And this is my friend, James Hutmaker. James, well, welcome to Rogue Talk. Ooh, let's see if I got him here. Are you there? James, do we have you? I may have cut him off here. Are you there, James? Well, we may have to try and get him back. Let's see if I can figure out what we're doing wrong here. James, are you there? There we go. Now I got you. Sorry about that.
That's all right. Just had to find the right button.
Yeah, it's I only get to do this once a week, and it's pretty rare that I even use the phone system. So. But James Hutmaker, and before we dive into this, my connection to James initially, as I mentioned, goes back to Little League, because his dad was one of my first coaches, and we got to talk, and James and I were talking last night, and I realized as we were talking back and forth through Messenger that actually Captain Crozier's dad was my first Little League coach. And the reason I really didn't remember that well is because a couple of games in, we were doing, or it was actually not even the regular season yet. We were in a practice game. I had a really bad uppercut swing, which James's dad probably helped me with the next year. And I foul tipped a big, big hanging curveball right into my nose, broke my nose, and basically sat out most of the season. The highlight of my baseball season that year was the swim party at the end of the year. but then I moved on to play for James's dad, and he taught me to catch, which is definitely your position as well, isn't it, James?
Yeah, I kind of moved around. I was a initially, you know, my father was a catcher growing up, and so I kind of adopted being a catcher. But unfortunately, on my team, Tim Cousins was ahead of me, so I had to find other positions to play. I wasn't taking his spot, so I ended up playing third, and then eventually one of our players had an injury, kind of like yours, that had him out for the season. He broke his arm skateboarding. And that's when I was converted to a pitcher, and I pitched really through high school, and then I played independent league ball as a pitcher, but have since gone back to catching because I love it so much.
Yeah, it's my favorite position, and after your dad taught me to catch, I have terrible memories of those teams, and I don't even remember. I'm assuming you were on that. It was the Braves. And I think it was the only year I played for your dad, but I just remember I was the backup catcher, but we didn't have another backup when I came onto the team, and so he's like, "Hey, do you want to learn how to catch?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I guess." I'd only been playing baseball for a year, so I'm like, "Yeah, sure." You can see how bright I was, you know. But then I went on to, I mean, every chance I got, I'd volunteer to catch. When we'd play street hockey, I wanted to be the goalie. I mean, it was like things coming at me at a high rate of speed seemed to be fun for me. I'm not sure what that says about me, but I've always
ADHD.
Yeah. Well, I've always been grateful for having your dad, you know, and actually later on, my brother will appreciate this if he's listening today. Your dad owned the Park Deli for a while, which was right near Howard Park, is that right?
Yes,
he did. And see, we used to go in there. My brother and I, we'd go in there. We'd get pierogies. We'd cut a slit into them, fill them full of mustard. We'd get a soda, and we'd go across the street and watch the Guanella Brothers fast pitch softball team for hour. I mean, we would watch tournaments that went on for 2 days, and we would just watch game after game after game. And so we dropped a lot of money in the Park Deli back then.
Well, we appreciated it. Yeah, those were good days watching the Guanella Brothers. Those were some phenomenal athletes playing fast pitch softball.
Yeah, and then they moved to Rohnert Park, and then they finally shut down, and that was kind of when I transitioned to Major League Baseball, became a season ticket holder for the A's. Another thing you and I share is a love for the good Bay Area team. But yeah, those were good times. So the reason
I asked what the difference between the two was, the A's versus the Giants, and the way I explained it to my friend here in Texas was that at a tailgate for the A's, there's beer and sausage and hot dogs. If you go to the Giants, it's typically wine and cheese.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. We're the beer and brat guys for sure. But the reason I wanted to bring you on is when I originally decided, hey, I think I should cover this story about Brett. You made a post on Facebook, and of course you were a classmate of his, and the reason that your post kind of stood out to me is because you said a few of the things that I was thinking and I didn't want to say. And the reason was all of our classmates were pouring out support for Captain Crozier, and I support him 100% as a classmate, as the fact that everyone that I can talk to that knows him better than I do says how honorable he is. So I support him 100%. However, my support for him doesn't necessarily mean I condone if he did something wrong. And that's where this thing all gets kind of cloudy, because the information is not the best. But you pointed out some of those things, and because of your service in the Navy, I felt like you really had the right perspective on this. Not only were you his friend, but you also knew how the Navy worked and those things. So I thought we could go over the timeline and you could kind of help me work my way through this.
Absolutely.
So I just kind of sketched out a little bit of the timeline to get an idea. And actually, let's kind of quickly, before we get into that timeline, I want to thank Michelle Castile, who I've mentioned on this show before. She sent me a link to a story that came out today that said that they're recommending the reinstatement of Captain Crozier, but that Defense Secretary Mark Esper says he needs some more time, so he has not signed off on that, but that Admiral Mike Gilday, the U.S. Chief of Naval Operations, they've announced they'd completed their investigation, and they are recommending a reinstatement, but it hasn't happened yet. So that's where we're at right now. But let's go back to kind of the start of this, and let's see if we can work our way through this. So let me get my page flipped over so I don't get them out of order here. So the week of March 21st, the first cases were detected, or actually the first case was detected on the USS Theodore Roosevelt, which is the aircraft. And maybe I should preface this in case people don't know what I'm talking about. Captain Crozier was assigned the command of the aircraft carrier Theodore Roosevelt, USS Theodore Roosevelt. And he had only been in command for a few months when they got their first reported case of the COVID-19 or the coronavirus. And they airlifted the sailor to a nearby hospital. And then later on, 15 more people tested positive. So at this point, it's probably concerning, but I wonder how much even Captain Crozier knew at that point when the first case went off there. You know, he's got to start thinking there's 5,000 sailors on this ship. Kind of describe, James, what are the confines like on a ship like that?
You know, as massive as an aircraft carrier is, especially the Roosevelt, the quarters are relatively tight, you know. Most of the enlisted men are in rooms with either at least one other individual or possibly four, up to four people in one little area. So it is close quarters, you know, and it's like an entire city on the water. You know, everything that you would want to have access to as a person is there on the ship, in addition to you doing your job on the ship. So it is close quarters. You're around people on a regular basis passing by. So it's tight.
Yeah. And so something like this, social distancing is almost a laughable idea if you're on an aircraft carrier, if I'm reading you right.
It would be impossible to really social distance. And, you know, I don't think there's any way that.
And I would assume they probably wouldn't even have anywhere near the level of PPE equipment to even start handing out masks to the entire crew. I mean, I could be mistaken. They may have that kind of resource, but I would be surprised if they did.
I wouldn't. I don't think, based on my experience, that there would be enough to go around for the entire ship, or even if a large number of people were to become infected, as what happened, you know, that they would even have the ability to protect those individuals from infecting others.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So we move on from the week of the 24th. We have approximately 15 people have tested positive. March 26th, there was a scheduled docking in Guam. And it was ordered at that point that all 5,000 sailors should be tested. And at that point, they believe that a previous stop in Vietnam may have been the source of the virus on the carrier, which would make sense because their outbreak had started. It wasn't it wasn't large yet, but it was large enough, and we know that this thing can spread, you know, rather quickly. So, you know, that's probably a good assumption, and that's not to cast any dispersions on the country of Vietnam. That's just the timeline of how things worked out. Then on March 30th was when it starts to get serious, and that's when the politics start to kick in. March 30th, Captain Crozier pleaded with the Navy to evacuate the ship. And let me bring up, I've got a little bit of his statement. If I can find it here. Well, I thought I did. Well, we'll have to pass on that because I thought I had a screenshot and I don't have it.
That's all right.
So go ahead, James.
The thing to remember, too, is at this time, the data that everybody had was very, very distorted on really how vicious this virus was and how it would spread so rapidly. We weren't getting good data from anywhere. And so there was a lot of question as to how contagious it was, how deadly it was. Nobody really knew at that point.
Yeah, and so I got to give Brett a ton of credit in this, in that he's already realizing, and we're still, you know, kind of floating around in all the data and the projections and how the testing is supposed to work and what's the purpose of the testing. And he had the foresight, you know, back then to say, hey, we've got to do something. And so that was March 30th, you know, that he pleaded with the Navy, we need to evacuate this ship. Well, this is where it got ugly for Captain Crozier. March 31st to April 1st, somewhere in that period between the 31st and the 1st, the letter was leaked, and the San Francisco Chronicle published the letter. And of course, the facts on this are still really fuzzy. I cannot find definitive information. The Navy, well, I shouldn't say that. The certain people involved in this claim that he CC'd the email, which is considered a classified email at that point, to several people, and that's why it leaked, and so that's why eventually he was fired. But the facts on that are not really clear, and hopefully this investigation's gonna tell us that. But so that was April 1st that the Chronicle published the letter, and it didn't take long. April 2nd, the Navy fired Crozier, and of course it starts to become political. But before we kind of get into the steps that happened after that, this is kind of where I wanted to get your take, because this is where I felt like you had a kind of a balanced approach to this. If, in fact, he was responsible for the leak, does that change the way you feel about this, James?
It doesn't change my support for Brett. You know, you and I have an advantage, and his classmates have an advantage that a lot of people don't. And that is, you know, we know the guy's character. We know Brett's character. So for me, it doesn't change my stance. I can actually support him, but also be honest and truthful about how things happen is against Navy protocol. And I'm not saying that they were justified in relieving him of his command, but I know for a fact that Brett had waived, you know, he laid every different option out, and he knew what the ramifications could be based on what he did. You're not a career Navy man without knowing that explicitly.
Yeah, and that was kind of where what my feelings were, and I've seen a lot of our classmates kind of echo this same thing, is that it's very clear to me that his first priority was the safety of his sailors. And I think, and I know there's I can't mention names of people I didn't get permission to, but there's a friend that you and I have in common, and her mother had said that I think he knew the ramifications, and he still did this because the safety of the sailors was above all else in his mind. And I agree with that take, is that I think he knew the potential ramifications of what he did. And again, I don't know that the evidence still isn't clear how responsible he was for that leak. Although, you know, I think he definitely has to shoulder some of that responsibility because he did pen the email. But that's kind of where I fell, is that I understand the Navy responding, but I don't know that I don't know that relieving him of his command was necessarily the right step. But I know in my heart that if this guy is the same guy that was the kid that I grew up playing Little League with, that he absolutely was doing what he thought was the right thing for his men. And
well, in all his actions since then, you know, he's been quiet. You haven't seen him on the morning news shows or heard him on talk radio.
No, not at all.
He's put his head down. He's handling business. And just to kind of give you a lay of the land, you know, chain of command is really a religion when it comes to the military. You're not allowed to bypass the chain of command regardless. It's really not an accepted practice. It has to be an extreme situation when you do that. And Brett's not just a normal guy that got out of high school and went to the military for 3 or 4 years, you know, like most of us did. You know, this is his career. He went to the Naval Academy, and he's lived the Navy from day one. So, you know, I am confident that based on that, you know, he took the right steps up until this point to get this letter out. And I believe maybe if all the information were to come to light, what we're going to find out is that he did go to the admirals that are his next in line, and that their arms and hands were handcuffed by then acting Secretary of the Navy. And I think that's why Brett A. took the step that he did to get the exposure that he did. But also B, why they're actually considering him to be reinstated back to his command. Because at the end of the day, when you look at this whole thing, even if you don't know the military, you don't know Brett, it really was a debacle when it comes to the way that the acting Secretary of the Navy, now resigned, handled the situation to begin with. You had a whole nation and really most of the world up in arms about the coronavirus, the COVID-19, and scrambling for data, yet here we have a guy that, from all accounts, seems like he's trying to do the right thing, take care of his people, and we just handled it wrong. We basically told the world, don't use your common sense, don't care for other people, you got to adhere to these strict rules, which ironically is kind of what they're doing to us right now when it comes to a lot of the quarantine and lockdown.
Yeah, and again, I'll go back to what I said before. I salute him for his foresight to see that, hey, this is going to be a problem, because we've got people that still don't really know how to handle this thing. And you mentioned the acting Navy Secretary, Thomas Maudley, or he was at the time. And so let's kind of jump back into the timeline, because this is where things started to get kind of ugly. So on April 2nd, they fire Captain Crozier. And Thomas Maudley, the acting Navy Secretary at the time, you know, he mentions that the CCing of the email was the reason for the dismissal. Immediately, Democrats on the House Armed Services Committee blasted Maudley and demanded an investigation. And so this is when everything gets pretty cloudy, but it also starts to get political. And before we get to Maudley's speech that led to his resigning, you know, there was a lot of talk, and unfortunately, you and I, we see this a lot with social media. You know, a lot of people immediately went to the orange man bad, blame the president. But if you look at the president's statements on this, while I know he had to have been briefed on it, he's the commander in chief. This is a huge decision to do. I'm not sure he gave a lot of input into the firing of Captain Crozier. And I'm not one to defend President Trump for no reason. When he says stupid stuff, I'm going to be the first to call him out for saying stupid stuff. But if you look at his statements on this, I don't think he had a real active involvement in this. And yet, you know, social media, of course, everything's now the president's fault. What was your perspective on that?
It was obvious to me when I heard the president speak on the matter that he was getting information from Modley, and that's how he derived his opinion, which, of course, was absolutely one-sided. And I can understand that. You know, Modley was trying to cover his tail and trying to justify his actions that had come under fire. So, like you, I don't think it was President Trump's decision to relieve him of duty. I solely feel like it was based on Modley, period,
yeah.
In the story. And I think as information got out and the president became more aware of the situation, you could see his tone change drastically. It went from a very hard line to more of an understanding and actually saying things like, you know, that he heard that he's a great guy.
Yeah, so, he did something he doesn't do a lot. He started choosing his words pretty wisely.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the other evidence to me that I don't necessarily think this was any kind of a knee-jerk reaction from President Trump was all of the hot water that he got himself into when he pardoned a Navy SEAL?
Right.
That shows me that he's more, you know, supporting the guy on the ground than he is even, you know, Thomas Modley.
Yeah, when you study President Trump, you find out that he's always had an extreme admiration for men and women in the armed services. And ironically, when this all came down, you saw a lot of posts on social media that were suggesting that the Navy SEAL shouldn't have been pardoned. And they were posting a lot of really poor information that was not even accurate.
Mm-hmm.
But that just goes to show you the disparity that we have today when it comes to politics. People do and say a lot of things that are really a poor judgment to justify their stance on something rather than go with the facts and go where the information takes them.
Yeah, they let either their ideology, and this happens on both sides, or in the case of the left, they let their hate for President Trump kind of cloud. And we see it with coronavirus right now. Now, he says some stupid stuff, and I just wish he'd let the experts speak for him more often. But having said that, he's made some good decisions, and we're seeing a lot of people, unfortunately, because it's political now, we're seeing a lot of people on the left come out and say contradictory things, even though they know full well that that was the right thing, but they can't allow themselves to give him any kind of credit. And it's kind of dispiriting because I've lost a few friends on Facebook because of my conservative beliefs. I've never unfriended anybody for their liberal beliefs. And again, I'm not making this a one-sided thing. I'm sure it happens both ways, but it's sad that it happens at all.
Well, and the really the most sad component of it is the fact that as adults, we should be able to still acknowledge somebody when they do well, even if you don't totally agree with them as a person or agree with them politically. It doesn't take away the fact that they have done something positive, regardless of who they are. And we all need to get to that point where we can understand that, you know, just like people, regular people in the world, they do things or say things that maybe you don't agree with or don't condone, but that doesn't mean that you got to hate them.
Yeah. Well, and it even happens outside of politics. I got called a moron this morning just because, well, actually for no reason, but you know, because I don't like the 49ers. So go figure. But, hey, it made for a fun Facebook post for me anyhow, but, I got to give him a little bit of a grammar lesson, which coming from me is pretty ironic, but, So let's jump back to the timeline before I take us down another path we don't need to go down. So that brings us back to April 5th, and in front of all of the sailors from the carrier, our friend Mr. Modley called Captain Crozier too naive or too stupid to command the carrier. And that's a quote, at least the too naive or too stupid. And this is where you and I and most of our classmates really got our dander up. And of course, it led to a chain of events that Maudley eventually resigned on April 7th.
Ironically, it's like the chickens coming home to roost. Who was the person that was so naive that he didn't know the audience he was talking to?
Yeah, this was the same. This was the same group of guys that cheered cheered the captain when he left his ship.
Yeah, and you think he's going to get away with bad mouthing him and calling him names? I mean, come on, this guy just took command of this ship. You know, one of a few nuclear-powered aircraft carriers. You know, and now all of a sudden he's naive and stupid. I mean, that was the nail that needed to be put in his coffin, honestly.
Yeah, it was. And he even started hedging a little bit on April 6th, but really he wasn't. I mean, he said he stood by his remarks, but he kind of hedged on not quite remembering what he had said. And you could tell that he was in the wind and he was about to be blown away and he knew it. And so, of course, on the 7th, he resigned, and we use the big air quotes because every time somebody in a political administration resigns, we know what that means. It means you were asked to resign, and so he was gone. And of course, then we can fast forward to today, where the Navy investigation is recommending that he's reinstated, although he has not yet been reinstated. What is your feelings on that? Do you think he should be reinstated? And do you think he'll accept that position back?
You know, I'm not sure if he'll accept it or not, but I do feel he should be reinstated. Just because even though we don't have all the facts, we know a lot of the core facts, that he felt like he was doing the right thing. And from all accounts, it appears as if him and his superiors were handcuffed by the acting Secretary of the Navy. The thing I wanted to do, Jeff, though, if it's okay with you, is to take a step back and explain to individuals that maybe don't have experience in the military why what he did was, regardless of intent, why it was a big issue that had to be looked at closely. What people need to understand is that in the Navy, fleets are comprised of several different ships. Those ships are basically sent to a part of the world on a mission to be prepared, be ready, to be a presence. And each of those fleets have one aircraft carrier. So when this got out into the world that this ship had an issue, it potentially put the entire Navy fleet at risk. Okay, it's not so easy as to go return a rental car to swap out an aircraft carrier for an aircraft carrier. You essentially have an aircraft carrier that's covering a portion of the globe, right? And now you've got to replace it with another inactive ship, right?
Mm-hmm.
And with sailors. And I mean, it really potentially puts a huge strain, even if the world didn't find out about it, on the entire Navy fleet. Now, the other thing that it does, in addition to that, is it does provide the enemies of the United States the perception that we're weakened, and it gives them an opportunity to potentially strike. Now, I realize that in today's day and age, a lot of people think, well, that's nonsense. That would never happen. Well, that's not true. You know, it potentially could happen. And so that in and of itself is really the biggest issue with Brett doing what he did is it was potentially a weakened event for the entire Navy, not just the one ship. So people really need to understand kind of the way I equated it in my post was this. It's kind of like the NBA saying LeBron you can't play today. The Lakers, you've got to play 4-on-5 like that. That's essentially what would happen. So from a military standpoint, there is, it's a great risk, and it's a tough decision, and it has to be looked at really in that way, because that's how you're taught to think in the military. You put, you know, the country that you serve is ahead of everything else, and thinking about your soldiers or sailors, while it should be paramount, technically in the military, you kind of sign that away, and it's not really typically the first thing that you think of.
excuse me. Goodness. I'm all, excuse me, all choked up about your words, James. Wow, man, it's rough. I'm fighting the Rona. No, kidding. Bad joke. Sorry, bad joke. Actually, though, we're up against a break, but I want to talk a little bit more about what you were just saying there, and I have a question for you related to the importance of the aircraft carrier. So let's take a quick break, and we'll come back with James Hutmaker, and we will be right back.
You're listening to Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge. The Bridge.
With SRN News, I'm Keith Peters in Washington. President Trump has signed a $484 billion bill that aids employers and hospitals under stress from the coronavirus pandemic. The outbreak has killed more than 50,000 Americans and devastated broad swaths of the economy. The bill is the latest effort by the federal government to help keep afloat businesses that have had to close or dramatically alter their operations as states work to slow the spread of the virus. Easy passage of this aid installment belies a potentially bumpier path ahead for future legislation. Anchoring this bill is the Trump administration's $250 billion request to replenish a fund to help small and medium-sized businesses with payroll, rent, and other expenses. On Wall Street, the Dow up by 260 points, the NASDAQ rose 139, the S&P advanced 38, oil up to $16.94 a barrel. More details at srnnews.com.
Broadcasting to Rum River, Gold Hill, Weimer, and beyond. 94.3, The Bridge.
Welcome back to Rogue Talk, and I think I got my voice back. I apologize for missing the cough button there, but you know, when you get to be my age, you choke on air. It's just one of those things. And before we get back into our discussion, haven't gotten quite as much discussion online about it, but I do want to give a shout out to our friend Rayanne, who reminded me that she's actually my favorite. So you have to be second, James, but I'm sure you're okay with that.
I can play second fiddle to her.
Yeah. So you were talking about the importance of the, and again, I'm talking to James Hutmaker, a former Navyman and a friend of mine from years and years ago, as we talked about at the beginning of the show. You're talking about the importance of the aircraft carrier and the fact that them having to dock it and take everyone off of it, you know, it signals the world of the weakness. But there was another thing, too, and you kind of touched on this, but I want to make sure I'm getting this part of it right. Because it's an aircraft carrier, it also serves as support for the rest of the fleet that are in that, I don't even know what you call it. You can help me with that. And so taking an aircraft carrier out of commission, it's not just the carrier itself, but it's the other ships that are in that fleet as well. Is that right?
Absolutely. And I think the Roosevelt, correct me if I'm wrong, I think the United States still has, I think, 7 active fleets. And that's basically 7 groups of ships commanded by one individual. The whole fleet is, and then each ship has its commander, and that's what Brett was. So each one of those 7 fleets has an active aircraft carrier. So pulling one out, his 3rd fleet that he was a part of is extremely weakened because they don't have a point to stage aircraft. So if a conflict were to pop up in their zone, where their mission is, then there's no place to stage aircraft, either for support of the other ships or to support land troops or to engage in a conflict. So it's a major ordeal. You're taking a big player off the board when you get rid of an aircraft carrier or when you disable it.
Yeah, and so, you know, you can see why it's a huge decision for the military. And so, to a certain extent, you can understand, although I make no apologies or defenses of Maudley. He's shown us what kind of person he is. But the overall, you know, you mentioned the chain of command. Let's not forget that we know that some of our best and our brightest serve in the military, but that doesn't change the fact that the military is a government organization. So there can be, let's just say, a lot of molasses in the gears of getting things done on the bureaucratic side of things, I guess is what I'm saying. Has that been your experience? Because I know I had a story of a guy I used to work with that he told me that, just as an example, when he was in the Navy, and he was much older than you and I, when they were getting ready to pull into port, they would be, you know, 100 miles offshore or something like that, and they would be offloading supplies overboard, things like steel plates that they were going to use that are normally used to patch the hull in case of, you know, hitting something or whatever. They would throw food overboard, and the reason was, and I hope this has changed, but at the time, if you came back with too many supplies, they wouldn't give you as many supplies for your next voyage. And so that's an example of the kind of bureaucracy that goes on in the government everywhere. And the Navy's not, or, you know, none of the armed forces, you know, they're not exempt from this. That doesn't mean, again, I think some of our best people in this country are all in the military or they've served in the military. But the bureaucracy of government, no one escapes it. Does that sound fair?
No, that's a fair statement. It's absolutely true. And there is some struggles now because of the military in the last, say, 20 years has changed. When you look at what sailors have to go through for basic training, it's not near as difficult as it once was. It's become a little softer. So there's this kind of almost the old Navy versus the new Navy. And a lot of these older enlisted and officers, you know, they subscribe to a different Navy than some of these new individuals coming into. However, that doesn't take away the bureaucracy that you talk about. That's part of every government agency, and it's no different in the military, regardless of what branch you may serve in. There are things that you do just because that's the way you do it in the Navy. And the person that's telling you to do it that way is doing it because they were taught that way. And unfortunately, that takes precedence in a lot of cases over common sense or improvement. It's tradition. It's the way we do things. And it's very much like that in the military.
Yeah. And you know, that, it's kind of interesting because the way you phrase that, it made me think of the Supreme Court. One of the things that drives me insane when people talk about cases going before the Supreme Court, and I know this is a little bit of a tangent, but you made me think of that. They talk a lot about precedents, and that's kind of what you're describing, is that it's just the same thing, whether it's any good or not, it gets passed on. You know, just keeps getting passed on. And that's how I feel about precedents. You know, a lot of times they, in my opinion, and I'd love to hear your opinion. I know you're as political as I am about things. It's overused. And the examples of that are some of the horrible cases that have been decided the wrong way. As we look back in history, we know they were decided improperly. Yet you get people that will cite precedents, and they forget that the court makes mistakes, too. And it's kind of the same with the military. I think military change is so slow because of exactly what you're talking about. But do you what do you feel about precedence when it comes to something like that? And I know this is a tangent, but I got you here. And again, you're one of my favorite, you're one of my favorite thinkers, and I get to call you a friend as well. So I'm going to pick your brain on this one.
You know, precedence is just that. It's a previous decision. So like you said, people make mistakes, and let's face it, judges at all different levels, in some municipalities, they're elected. Others, they're appointed. So they're not beyond bias. We would like to think that a judge can sit on any bench, regardless of the level of court, and be completely non-biased and weigh the scales of justice equally for the plaintiff and the defendant. But that's not the case. They're hindered a lot of times by their own agendas, by the political party, by pressure. And I agree, it's very similar to the military saying, hey, we've done it this way. This is how I want it done, without taking a step back and looking at it, open it up, and really dig in and fight the good fight if necessary to make something correct and right. And I think the bureaucracy that we see in government, that's one of the issues, and one of the byproducts of bureaucracy is people become numb to trying to change things because they can't get the machine to work like it's intended to work. So at some point they throw their hands up and just say, it's precedence, it's tradition, it's just the way that it's done. I've got to do it in order to make my way. I've got to go along to get along. And I think if you look at really any politician, regardless of party, I think when they first, if you were to watch them when they first became politically involved, and whether they were a city councilman or president of their neighborhood association, I think their intentions were noble, regardless of party. It doesn't matter. I think they really wanted to change things in the world. Unfortunately, when they get in the middle of that machine, they realize it's not as easy as just thinking this is the right way to do it or coming up with a new idea. It requires lots and lots of work. It requires lots of fight. And it requires a lot of persistence. And let's face it, when people that are elected want to get reelected, the last thing they want to do is get mired into a fight and battle everybody, because when people turn against you, whether it's right, wrong, or indifferent, in today's day and age, they can really, really malign you and your family. And most people don't want to go through that.
No, well, I mean,
the Navy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about you, but I've been asked on more than one occasion to go into politics, and I've politely declined because I wouldn't put my family through that. But we're up against one more break. But if you can hang with us, we'll kind of close things out after this final break.
Absolutely.
All right. So we will be right back.
You're listening to Rogue Talk
on 94.3 The Bridge. The Bridge.
With SRN News, I'm Keith Peters in Washington. President Trump has signed a $484 billion bill that aids employers and hospitals under stress from the coronavirus pandemic. The outbreak has killed more than 50,000 Americans and devastated broad swaths of the economy. The bill is the latest effort by the federal government to help keep afloat businesses that have had to close or dramatically alter their operations as states work to slow the spread of the virus. Easy passage of this aid installment belies a potentially bumpier path ahead for future legislation. Anchoring this bill is the Trump administration's $250 billion request to replenish a fund to help small and medium-sized businesses with payroll, rent, and other expenses. On Wall Street, the Dow by 260 points, the NASDAQ rose 139, the S&P advanced 38, oil up to $16.94 a barrel. More details at srnnews.com.
Keeping you informed, giving you the good news. You're listening to 94.3 The Bridge, your hometown voice.
Welcome back. to Rogue Talk. And once again, joining me on the phone, James Hutmaker. And before we kind of close things out, James, I wanted to give you a chance. If people want to follow your blog, how can they do that, or can they do that? Is there a way to do that?
Yeah, I actually use the Google blog spot for my blog. It's All Love James. You can just search in the Google Blogspot site, and it'll pull it up. There's several different topics in there that people can look at. I typically write about life experiences and how to respond, and try to provide a little insight from my experiences. And so far, I mean, I get a lot of feedback, a lot of positive feedback, which is good. I don't know if people are just being nice or if what I'm writing is actually being read well. So,
I can't speak for everyone, but what you write is written, not only is it written well, but it's always very thoughtful. And I mentioned that at the outset. That's how I think of you, as a very thoughtful person. And I don't mean that in a touchy-feely kind of way. I mean, you think through these things and you give your best opinion. And I also like, and this, I'll say this because we are on a Christian station here, you have a Christian point of view to go with that. And I really appreciate that as well.
Well, you know, my relationship with Christ and God is important to me, and it would be silly of me not to share with people how that is a part of the experiences that I've had. And I always try to put it in a way that, you know, unfortunately, as Christians, sometimes Christians can be overbearing and not really think of the big picture. So I try to address being Christian and my relationship in a way that people don't see it as judgmental or imposing, but more of insight as to what it really is.
Yeah, and I, you know, and it's the fault of many Christians as much as it is the non-Christians, but people, like you said, people can be overbearing, but there's a misunderstanding, I think, about Christianity oftentimes that we are judgmental, and we're not. We believe certain things, but we also believe that we are also sinners. We're flawed human beings. There was only one perfect person that walked the earth, and we're not him. And so we're not supposed to judge other people. That doesn't mean we don't have a set of standards we try and hold ourselves to, but we don't ever meet those standards because we're sinners and we're fallen. And it's something that I think Christians need to hear as much as non-Christians, is that we, you know, we need to stop judging people. I try not to do it, but there are some of us that do, unfortunately. And it makes it harder to do our jobs as Christians when people are doing that.
That's the flesh. It's natural to do that, and it's a shame. We all do it at some point or another, and at the end of the day, we're judged by others as well. I think I had a real interesting conversation with a close friend of mine that I've known my entire life, and it was funny because we'll go back and forth debating Christianity, and the last conversation I had with him, he said, you know, I don't know about all the other stuff, but that Jesus dude, he was pretty amazing. I can get with him. it's amazing. You got it.
Yeah, for sure. So, James, we're going to run out of time. We got about 30 seconds left I can give you. If we had Brett Crozier on the line, what would you tell him right now?
I would say, Brett, you're the epitome of an American hero. You put other lives ahead of you, and really that's what we're called to do, is put others' interests in front of us and serve them properly. And the actions he took were really from a servant's heart. And I know that God's got his back, and something amazing is going to come out of this, if it hasn't already. So I'm behind him 100%.
Yep, I'm with you 100%. James Hutmaker, you're a good man. I'm glad to call you a friend, and thank you so much for joining me today on Rogue Talk.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. And everybody, be good to one another, because Rogue Talk is over.
You've been listening to Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge.
Listen to Rogue Talk with Jeff Smith, Fridays at 3 p.m. right here on Rogue River's Hometown Voice.
94.3 The Bridge.
Or on demand at 943thebridge.com.